Granite Square, Pennsylvania, on Sunday, July the 5th, 1987. The occasion for this recording is the 50th anniversary of the founding of Cambridge Meeting in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The group there is having a special celebration this year. Edith Comfort had some contacts with Cambridge Meeting in its early days, and we thought it would be very interesting to record some of her reminiscences. Barbara Curtis and John Curtis are doing the interviewing, and Edith will be doing the reminiscing. And I believe we are now about ready to start.
I would like to start by your telling that business about your grandfather. Had he been an early immigrant to California?
They moved from Iowa, California. He was a Quaker minister in Iowa, also had studied medicine, and had also run for the...
And his name?
Elias Tippett.
Elias Tippett.
His pastor, and he was a pacifist. During the Civil War, he paid an indemnity for someone to go south to fight for him. He and his wife and one child at that time went down to, was it Alabama, where they went down to work in the Friends School and the schools to teach black people.
Might have been. Also was in Tennessee, Friends School,
Tennessee.
Well,
they went down by boat.
Also.
And the school, it was very hard going. The school, they had the schools in the churches in various places. And many, he felt that the black people should be freed, but they also needed an education. And I think they had to go to school at night. It was very difficult. I don't know just how long he was there. Then he came back and went out to Oregon. And
he did not return to Iowa.
I'm not sure. He wandered. Mm-hmm. He was here and there. Right. He went out to Oregon to help raise money for the college.
For which college?
For it was then. It's George Fox now. It was what was it called then?
Pacific
College. And,
which was a Friends institution,
a Friends,
getting started.
Small Friends College, and they needed.
About what time was this? Either?
Well, that would have been, let's see,
1870 or earlier.
After the Civil War. I'm not sure. Just what time? He went to England. He wasn't too well received. I have had his diaries of his trip there, because this is when the Joel Bean case was going on here, which I do not know too much about. But it was not a pleasant situation.
No, there was much bitterness.
Much bitterness, and he was Oregon was under Iowa Yearly Meeting.
So,
and Joel Bean was connected with Iowa, and he was read out of. I don't know too much about that history, but grandfather's diaries of his time in England were interesting, and he was not received too well. Of course, he was a pastoral person.
Where are his diaries now?
They're in California with a cousin. One of my cousins. I have them for a while. I've been for quite a while.
Well, how did you get from Oregon, or your family, from Oregon to California?
Well, my grandfather was at Kansas for a while. Lawrence, Kansas, was pastor of the meeting there. He had Quaker feet. They wanted. He was at Kansas for a short time. Then they were seeking, the family was large at that time, and they were seeking a warmer climate. So they went to California. They had a mule team, he and my grandmother and part of the children. My father went some other way. In 40 days, they went from Portland, Oregon to Whittier, and it was a difficult trip, I think.
And he was called to be a pastor in some California community?
He was the first pastor of the First Friends Church of Whittier.
Which
I was a birthright member.
Right.
Then they lived in California, he and his...
Rest of his life.
Rest of his family. Another one of his sons had stayed in Oregon, and he was vice president at Oregon at Pacific College for a while. Mm-hmm. Then he was acting president of Whittier. They helped start Whittier College, carried bricks and stones and mortar and so on.
Was Whittier College a concern of California Yearly
as
Meeting?
Soon as, well, this one, my great-grandfather lived in the first house in Whittier. He moved out there from Ohio. Yearly Meeting.
That was your great-grandfather on the other side.
Yes, on the other, on Mother's side. The Quakers always had a concern for education. Mm-hmm. And you follow them across the United States.
Right.
One of the first things they wanted to do was to start an academy.
Right.
Usually it was not a college, it was an academy.
Right, because the academy was
so here was Whittier, this barren, brown hills. Mm-hmm. Not the way it is today. And they started an academy.
Which was designed mostly for Quakers, or were there non-Quakers?
Well, these were Quakers working on it. I don't suppose, I think they were probably all Quakers at that particular time, because Whittier was not very large.
And it was a Quaker community.
And it was a Quaker community. The people came from, many people from Iowa. My grandfather went with his family from Iowa. I think many of them were seeking a warmer climate as they got older. The children, of course, the children went. But this was one of their first concerns, and they started working on the build, carrying bricks and mortar and so on, starting the college, which was an academy. Now, I'm not sure, this the 100th year that Whittier is now celebrating its 100th year.
College
and the town.
Pretty exciting.
And it was very interesting.
Now, how did it happen, Edith, that when you were so involved, or your family, in the founding of Whittier, that you escaped going there to college?
I went to Whittier and graduated from Whittier College.
Oh, right.
In 1922. But in my junior year, I went to, my aunt was librarian at William Penn College. She wrote 2 weeks before college opened to see if I would like to go to Penn 1 year.
How very adventurous. That kind of thing wasn't done when
we
were young.
I hadn't been out of California, really.
And this is a transfer year, in a sense, a special year.
Two of us, I was a junior, and Margaret White was the sophomore, and two Whittier graduates went out to teach at Penn Academy. They still have the academy. The academies were swept off slowly.
Right, right.
So we took the train and went to Penn College. That's what changed my life.
Yes, yes.
I went there for a year and then went back to Whittier.
What did you choose to major in?
I suppose I was majoring in English, I think. And that's where I met for us, and that's what happened.
That's a very important point.
That was a very important, that changed
But you did go back to Whittier to finish your year. Forrest was already...
Forrest was in the same, he was in the same class.
So he had to finish at William Penn.
He finished at William Penn, and we didn't see each other for a couple of years, the correspondence was wrong. I couldn't decide that this should be deleted. I couldn't decide to leave California right away.
California's a beautiful state. It's hard to leave.
Yeah, it was hard to leave, and I was kind of provincial.
No, I don't think that follows. Now, Forrest finished his education, undergraduate education, and...
He was in the same class. He was 4 years older, but he'd been with the service committee overseas in that first group that went over.
After World War
One. After World War. Wars mixed up.
Sure.
He and Alton Truebud came east, and he went to social service school, and then he taught at Nebraska Central for 3 years. I joined in the third year.
I see.
That's the way we started. Alton Truebud was in the class, and so on. Well, then we finally, we taught at Nebraska Central, and then Forrest wanted to come east. So the first summer, we went to Cambridge Meeting, which was then in...
Roxbury.
We lived in the parsonage, with big parsonage, gas lights, and Elton had to go to Iowa. So Forrest, and it was the pastoral meeting.
And Elton was the pastor.
Elton was the pastor, so Forrest was the pastor for the summer. And they had asked me, I was applying for a job the next year at Francis Select, if I would go to summer school at Harvard. So we both went to Harvard summer school, and Forrest was the acting pastor. And it was the...
And he was beginning some graduate work of his own,
He did his graduate work at the Harvard. Then he decided he had to come back to Haverford, because they used to have these scholarships.
When you finished William Penn,
you came east. You used to get polished, say.
And he had done that, had he?
Well, no, we did that together. That's when I taught at Penn. That was the year after we'd been... But when we'd been at Harvard for the summer, Forrest decided he wanted to go back after he had finished... Here at Haverford.
You want to go back to Harvard and complete more
and then
graduate work.
We went back to Haverford, to Harvard, and that was the first year that they had the unprogrammed meeting. Moved from the meeting house to Harvard Hall, What part did we meet? There was no meeting house.
But a building on the grounds of the college.
And it was very interesting. There were one or two people there who very much opposed the non-pastoral system. But Elton was acting secretary then. He was not a pastor, but he was a secretary. And we had an office in Boston. And there were a number of young people there, a number of Penn College people, Midwesterns, people whom we'd known, and there was one or two Whittier College people there. It was a very interesting time because there were so many wonderful older people, and there were quite a group of young
really
people,
vigorous young people.
We had no first day school. Peggy was one. There was no first day school. But we met in this lovely room, big fireplace and so on. And the quiet meetings began, and there were active committees exploring the possibility of becoming part of 5 years meeting, which it was
at that time. Yes.
But New England then, who would we have belonged to? Because
Roxbury must have belonged to New England Yearly Meeting.
New England Yearly Meeting. It wasn't 5 years meeting.
No.
And Horace was on committees, and I can't think of this wonderful couple that were so active. In many meetings discussing the possibility of becoming part of 5 years meeting. And we brought our membership, mine from Hoodie and Forest from Nebraska, to
Roxbury first?
To the meeting when it became a
meeting on the basis of silent
Cambridge
worship.
Meeting, on the basis
Cambridge
of,
monthly meeting?
It was Cambridge monthly meeting, I guess, because it was, we became a monthly meeting, and that's what we joined.
Well, is it possible that one of the older people might have been a Hallowell?
Sarah Hallowell and the Perrys. Who was the older Perry? Henry Perry's parents. I could just see them.
Oh, yes, the Perrys.
The Perrys. And of course, Henry and I think it was Edith Perry.
Would it have been Arthur Perry? Would have been the older one?
Sound like Arthur. Perry. I can see him.
John says Arthur Perry was Henry Perry's brother.
I think so.
That sounds like it, yes. Mm-hmm. I can't.
Harvey? Wouldn't have been Harvey because he was down in Westerly.
Yeah,
Charles? Well, it's unimportant, except that they were the parents of Henry and Arthur.
And Henry attended the meeting, of course. There was Mary Gove. She was a wonderful person.
What's her name? Gove?
Mary Gove, G-O-V-E.
Oh, Gove.
And she was she'd been a very active person in the other meeting, but she was very active in it. And most warm and friendly. She was, well, they had been, and Blanche Howland, who was very active. Blanche was the secretary. The first year they moved to Cambridge, I think. Uh-huh. We had an office in Boston, in the Commons, the secretary, and Blanche Howland was the secretary. And she and her mother were very active in the meeting. Blanche very active and so warm and friendly that we all felt as if we
had there been quite disparate groups in the Cambridge area, in other words, Boston area, had there been a pastoral group that was quite strong?
There was one strong pastor lady, the Truebloods.
Benjamin Trueblood was the pastor, the father of
the pastor. Lyra Walkins. Lyra Trueblood Walkins, Lyra. She was one who never attended after we became a non-pastor. Her father, was it Benjamin? Her father had been pastor.
Yes.
And she could not accept it, which was very,
very hard. Everybody was upset.
Very hard on her because she knew all these people. But the meeting, I'm not sure whether they had a missionary group. I think maybe they did still.
Still had a missionary group.
When we moved. But we had a very active young people's group. I mean, there were a number of people going to Harvard. People in their 30s, even young.
Right.
And it was a very active group. We met once a month and had discussion groups.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a very active meeting and was well attended. The Townsends were a very important group there. Betty Townsend is still keeps in close touch. She was a daughter, a little older than our daughter. And there were many, many meetings and many discussions, of course, about deciding whether to become part of 5 years meeting. Friends do not do these things quickly, which is good. I mean, they try to get a consensus. And
did you draw many people to you from the Harvard community?
We had a good many students.
Right.
I think we had
as they do currently.
I think so, yes. In fact, well, Andy Tolles were there when we were students. I think Tom Harvey was there. I think we met then there. And there were people, of course, from all over the country, people going to the college, going to Harvard. So it was quite an active meeting, and we were certainly, we young people from afar, felt very welcome there and very much a part of it. I mean, we were...
How many years were you and Forrest there?
Well, we were there, see, we moved down here in about 35. We were there, I think, about 25 is when we were really back. No, well, 25 or 26.
But that's well before the actual formal date that they're celebrating at Cambridge. That's what has me somewhat puzzled.
Well, we had become a meeting. We had become part of 5 years' meeting before we left. I think that's when we joined, when it was a part of 5 years' meeting.
In the mid-1920s.
Yes, I think that the dates I don't have.
No, anyone doesn't. Right.
And I say we didn't have a first day school. We were children, and the children weren't meeting with us. Maybe it was born up there. It was just. We had discussion groups. The year Elton was there, he was the secretary. He was there just a year after we became a non-pastor. Then they had the secretary for a long time.
That was the lady's name you mentioned.
Juana Tallon. Right. She was very active. She was a wonderful person. And the Duguids, Mary Duguid.
Yes, and Mary Elkin and Duguid,
and then her
husband.
And then his sister, yeah. Isabel.
Isabel, yes,
she came, Duguid. She was down here.
Yes, they both came down, yeah. Mary and she, to
and
the
Mary,
Philadelphia area.
And Mary and entertained. I mean, we were in their home. We had lots of meetings.
In various people's homes,
discussing and... Friendly meetings. I think we all of us from the far outer parts, felt very much at home there. I have very happy memories of kind of interesting other names. Lilla Perry's, of course, were very active. I can see, what was Henry's father's name?
We cannot remember, neither one of us, John or I.
Fine looking person. They sat up. We had a fire in the fireplace, and it was in a large room. Andover Hall.
Good.
Met
okay.
there till it, with the meeting house was built after Forrest and I left.
Yes.
We moved back here. But this was a very nice place to meet, and of course we didn't have the Solis for Sunday school, first day school.
Because that was part of Andover Theological,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Nice fireplace, and I can see these wonderful people sitting up on the facing benches. Mm-hmm. Henry Perry probably did. Henry and Edith Perry, of course, were quite active there. There were many.
And Henry Cadbury and Lydia had not yet loomed on the scene.
Oh, Henry, they were there. Let me see. That's where I first met them.
Well, they came up there in 1935, but they had been there before, of course.
But they were living. I don't remember them in the meeting, but they were. But they were living there because of. I remember that Juanita, the chancellor, there. Of course, there were a number of us Western folk.
Yeah.
Going on to school there, to graduate school.
Right. But that was in the 20s that you were in graduate school.
That was in the 20s. But the 24. We were married before. The Cadburys, yes, that's where I first met them.
Was at Cambridge.
Cambridge.
During one of
the house there near the center.
Well, Henry was called back from there to teach at Bryn Mawr for a while.
That's
and
right.
I think that would have been like 1925 or something when he went back. And
yes.
It wasn't until 1936 that he then went back to stay for the rest of his life and become the Hollis professor.
Yes, right.
But by then, you had left the area.
Yeah. And when we were all up there, the teachers though came up.
Oh, yes, and he had such a problem.
Earl Winslow didn't sign, so he had to leave. Forrest didn't sign. But then they were deciding they didn't want too many, didn't want to bother with too many people who hadn't signed, so Forrest never had any problems, he just didn't sign.
And he was a graduate student,
he
wasn't like losing your livelihood, which it was for Henry.
No, but and Earl Winslow, Earl was teaching, well, Forrest was, he was in the School of Education, and graduate school of education,
right,
and he was doing, he was doing some teaching.
Right.
He was supposed to sign the oath.
Everybody was, I remember that.
And he refused, and then they were getting quite a few, and they didn't really want all this on their list. So that you see...
Who didn't want it on their list?
The college or whatever.
The university, Harvard.
Harvard.
So
it didn't sound very good, you know, to say you have so many people who are
refusing to sign the teaching note.
They never bothered for whether he could sign it.
I see.
That happened apparently.
I get it.
Quite a few, because there were quite a few children up to a minute.
There's a limit to how far we can take this in.
That's right. I was trying to think if there were any others. Well, those were some of them. I thought the biggest, though. We were in their home many times. And, of course, we were the young friends, and they were a little older.
Surely.
I remember Mary saying, sometime you won't be the young friends. That was hard to believe, of course.
Right.
But the meeting, we have good attendance, and I can't say the figures, but I don't know how many.
Probably 35 or 40.
Oh, at least. And it grew. The meeting grew. And I just cannot think of the name of the wonderful couple of committee meetings. Well, we had many, many committee meetings about joining.
What was the way to go?
5 years. What was the way to go? And there was opinions on both sides. Some people were not interested in it. I think the young people were interested in it. We were interested in it.
What made the young people be interested in it? Why did they think it was such a good idea?
Well, I think part of it probably was emotional for some of us because we came from 5 years meetings.
Oh, and you would like to be part of what you grew
up
with.
That was one thing. When we moved down here, we couldn't transfer our membership for quite a little while. We went to get the new unexplainable emotional reason. I felt as if I wanted to be part of 5 years meeting, which Philadelphia
wasn't. Well, that's right.
So it was quite a little while, and we visited various meetings and then decided on Radnor because it was both groups.
You had distinguished precedent. After all, Rufus Jones brought his membership to New England.
But we could be a part of both. We didn't want to be either Hickside or whatever.
Want to make that choice.
But I think that it was at this point, I think, many of us had come from pastoral meetings, many of us from the West.
Right.
And I think that the longer we were part of the other type of meeting, the more we liked it. And I think it appealed to young people.
Right. And possibly because it put the responsibility on them.
I think it still does. Whittier College, of course, we have the church, but they also have an unfocal meeting, which for us and I used to do. And
when
now
you
it's
out
not a specific joke, but it's a specific year meeting.
Well, then it became Southwestern yearly meeting.
No, I think it's
Pacific. It's still Pacific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they met at the college and met early, so they wouldn't interfere. I used to go to the other church to get in because I knew many people there. But I think that the non-pastoral all over the country and college communities has had a special appeal. I think the young people have felt much more interested in it because it was, I think they felt it was deeper spiritually, and also we were interested in problems and issues and in religion. I think that's been part of it, as I say, Grace.
And the formalities of having a pastoral leader did not appeal particularly. Wanted to take responsibility for your own worship.
And I think that's where, but I think, I don't think there was too much opposition to it in Cambridge when there were a few people who stood out people tried to get the friendship with them and tried to
bring them back into the fold.
You can't always.
No.
And it was the loss of the people who didn't come, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the meeting house in Rockville was sold.
Helped to fund the new building?
I don't know, because the new building was quite a while after we left. Mm-hmm. I don't remember just how I've been in it, but we left. Then George Selleck, Elton Truebug, was there a year after we came out. He was secretary, and then he left. And Branch Howland was secretary, and he just did the bookwork and that.
Kept track of the membership changes and sent out the notices.
And we had monthly meetings in town. It was that kind of thing rather than the ministry. Their life was a ministry, but not. So I don't remember just how many years it was before. Then George Selleck, after we left, George Selleck became secretary.
And he served a long time with Florence, his wife.
Yes.
And a very happy time, and he saw the transition.
He saw the transition.
From no building of your own to your own building, in which he and Florence lived.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been Betty Townsend wanted me to go up. I said, well, Betty, I wouldn't know anyone there now, really. I mean, after.
Well, there's still some people there. There's a young Joe Stokes, who's a great nephew of the Duguids, for instance.
Mary
His mother was Frances.
Oh.
Younger sister of...
Mary Duguid was that one.
Mary.
Very friendly, naturally.
Yes, and, right.
What was his name? I know he was...
I know that he ran that inn out there at... Natick? That's not quite right. That's the wrong name of the place, but it was a very lovely inn. And I don't. Well, he was William Duguid, and
William
his sister was Isabel.
Isabel,
right?
And I think
she's Scotch Whipple.
She came down to Folkways.
Yes, or was it the other one, Friends Hall? I guess she came to Folkways. I'm not sure.
She was there some.
I know that Mary was at Friends Hall or whatever it was called, and you know her mother was John
Fox Chase.
Oh.
And then when Joe Stokes and Frances moved to an apartment building in Chestnut Hill, they felt she wasn't ill enough in that kind of setting, so they brought her to an apartment of their own.
Oh, yes.
And Isabel came down, too.
They were, the Duguids were very much a part of the Cambridge meeting and of the change, and very friendly. And
they came as convinced friends from Europe, I think they were.
Well, Isabel had the background. Did she ever join? I'm not sure.
They were not friends when they came, then.
I don't think so.
Perhaps because of the marriage to the Elkington.
Of course, Mary did that as a fact.
Oh, yes. So she was Mary Elkington.
And, he came to meeting. I mean, I don't really know about that. And Isabel, of course, came to meeting. She was very much a part of the meeting. I don't know that she, I don't remember just, you know, who it
been members before or whatever.
And then Alton Trueblood left. Blanche Howland was really wonderful.
Was she a member of that wonderful New Bedford Howland family who'd been involved in the whaling trade?
I expect so. Her mother lived with her, and it was an interesting story. The mother was lovely, too. The mother had not been a Quaker. I think she'd been raised an Episcopalian. And when she married whatever Howland's first name was,
George, maybe?
I just don't remember, because he wasn't living.
Oh, I see.
She said they came to visit him to read him out of meeting, because he had married out of meeting. And Brian said her father had a wonderful twinkle and said, and he said, well, I promise never to do it again. And his wife, he wasn't living, his wife left to tell that story. She was a lovely little,
lovely.
I promise never to do it again. And she said he never did. I thought that was a nice little Quaker story.
Well, George Selleck writes a little bit about the early days of the meeting, and he tells a little bit about two rather austere New England women who sat at head of meeting and were very instrumental in setting the tone, and they were Hallowells.
Hallowell. I should have looked at that book. I don't own that book, but I read it.
I should
have borrowed that and looked at it. I would recall some of the names. Yes, I remember. I think they were...
One of them may even have still worn a Quaker type.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they're very nicely dressed, but I think the expensive Quaker costumes,
that were.
Yes, I remember them, and I remember the elder Perry, Henry's father. I don't remember whether his wife was there, but he was a very fine-looking sort of courtly gentleman, and they sat. We had the seats on each side of the facing benches, were on each side of the fireplace.
Right.
And then we were out in the audience, and of course, the cold weather. But I remember them sitting up there, and
looking
very
appropriate and dignified.
Very appropriate and dignified. And
was the ministry fairly well spread out among all of you, younger as well as older?
I think the minister, as I say, this was my really first experience with non-program meetings.
Right.
And it takes a little while to settle in.
Yep.
And I was 23 or something like that. I wasn't old at that point.
No.
Not quite as old as I am now. I think there was a good deal of speaking. Yes, because of course we had a good many students. And of course some of the students had not come from this type of meeting, but I think it appealed to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has tended, I have noticed in Quaker colleges that I've known something about, that the young people have tended to want a non-program meeting,
setting.
even if it was a small section. There's one at Guilford now, in fact, when I visited Juanita, we went to the end, there's an unprogram.
Meets in one of the college halls.
Yeah, and then of course there's the church.
Yep.
And they had a brass band one Sunday, and one of our good friends said, I fancy it's hard to worship with a brass band. but I can't, you know, I can think of it, I can see the people, but I can't, our names seem to be something that's
Well, but you've given a very good insight into some of the proceedings.
It was a very, I think that the whole meeting section, I think we felt a warmness and a fellowship, a close fellowship. And there were we young people and there were the older people, and they made us, we were all part of the body.
You felt at home and a part of the body of worship.
The Dugas, of course, were older. Blanche Howard was much older. She was just wonderful. And she wasn't a vocal, her vocal ministry, it was her life.
Right.
And her mother was a lovely little person. So I think I have done, that's where Forrest and I brought our memberships from different places.
Yes.
And members there, so we moved down here.
Right.
And there were people from Iowa and Nebraska and Oregon, all Whittier. There were some of my Whittier College friends were there. So it was, and being a university.
Oh, yes. Such a tremendously exciting and stimulating place to be
Do you know the Tolles, Andy and Marilyn?
We hear of them through Christopher.
Chris Merrill, they weren't married. Marilyn and they met down here, but we knew Andy. And there were several men who were not married at that time. Earl Winslow from Iowa. We were from many states.
Yeah, right.
But I think and you were asking about the ministry. As I remember it, the ministry was quite general, shall I say, not just
the people who sat ahead of meetings.
That's right. They contributed. There are one or two other names I can remember, the people, but I can't remember their names.
Well, you've come up with some pretty good remembrances
but
already.
I was very sad to leave there.
Spiritual home.
But people all began to, you know, they
go off to new employment.
Going to different places. The chances came down here and the woman herself. But it was a wonderful starting place for
us,
really.
Right. Was Harold in graduate school at the same time
that
Forrest was? Oh, he was at
Boston University.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved about the same time we did. We all, and Earl, you probably didn't know the Winslows.
The name is so familiar.
Earl was a wonderful, he graduated, he went to Harvard. And then he was teaching at Tufts, and he lost his job at Tufts on account of not signing
the teacher's oath.
The teacher's oath.
Paid price for principal.
That's right.
Did he have a son named Caleb?
They had no children.
Okay, and the Caleb.
There was Caleb. Caleb Smith.
Smith. Oh yes.
Caleb and Dora Smith.
Right.
And the parents. Oh, he was treasured. Oh, he was probably. Oh yes, they were very active. And then where did I meet her in later years down here? Oh, she didn't marry. She lived in Virginia. I think she belonged to Washington. And Caleb. Caleb moved down here. Caleb Smith's family is very active. I can't think of his first name. Gertrude was his wife. They were, he was treasurer, I think.
Of this little worship group.
Of our
first friend group.
I don't know how many. I think of Andover Hall's fairly large. And it was pretty well filled most of the time. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we had many visitors. Just the normal stages. And Henry, I met Cadbury's up there, but I don't think of them in connection with the meeting. They would have been if they'd been there. I'm not sure.
Right.
But the Cadburys were there, and that's where I met. That's where I was always kind of afraid of Lydia at first.
Yeah.
She was outspoken, you know.
Yeah.
I came to adore her.
Right. So, but very unpredictable and extremely forthright.
And Aunt Forrest used to say, she'd say to Forrest, that Edith just laugh. You know, I was kind of a young thing from the far distant places.
Right,
but
right.
I saw a great deal of her later years. She said one time, you know, her voice was so funny, we met up at Dr. Mother's. She said, does he still miss my mother? Loudly out there.
Yes. Yes.
I said, yes, I do. It was the show. Well, she was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
You come to appreciate people.
Yes.
Now,
distance lends enchantment sometimes.
That's right. And I saw a great deal of her because Betty lived there, Betty Taylor. And,
In recent years,
in
yes.
In recent years. And
right.
Then after Henry died, we were in and out.
Right.
And when Forrest died, she drove over, and I was afraid she was going to fall down the steps getting out of the bus. Bless her heart. They each came over. They happened to come separately. I appreciate it. But she was driving a little less. But it was a very, very fine experience, which we both enjoyed very much.
But you have never had any time to be back at Cambridge since then, because your entire life has been down here in the Philadelphia area.
We visited there, but usually, of course, we kept in touch with South.
Sure.
Barack was living, and we stayed in their apartment once, and we were touring. No, we didn't get up there very much, and for one reason, we didn't have too much money when we were still.
And your professional life kept
you
here.
And we were busy here, and so that's the way it was. But, Peggy was a birthright member. She was a birthright member of the Cambridge meeting.
An early one.
Yes, an early
one. I would say so.
I don't think we have them now, do we? Birthright members. Do people make choice? I'm not sure about rarely. We transferred, because we was transferred when we came down here.
You have to take a step, but you can be called, if you want your child, it can be called a birthright member. But you have to write and ask for that privilege.
I think now, it seems to me at Ragga, when the child was 12 years old or something, somebody, went in and talked to them to see if they were interested in becoming...
That's younger than most meetings do it.
It's probably a little younger, and I'm not too sure.
Because many times friends objected to the pressure that was put on children. And I know in Germantown meeting, it's 21. At that time, you have to choose whether you want to be a friend or not.
I'm not sure. But I don't know why 12 comes to my mind. I don't know. But I think there is a feeling that the children should be of an age to have some... feeling about it.
Right.
And sometimes
urge
it's
their consideration.
I
think we've used up enough of Edith's time.
I don't think I've really done anything.
Oh, yes, you have. It's been very helpful.
Yeah, but it was, I think, one of the things that I remember so much is the warmth of the fellowship, which drew us in.
Helped to shape your religious lives.
Very much so, and we were far, and of course it was my first experience, really, in quiet meetings.
Right.
And I had to get used to it. I had to
learn how to use the time.
You have to become a part of it.
Yeah.
And I think everyone helped. There were quite a few of us, of course, from pastoral meetings, and I think it was a very good place to begin.
Lots of ferment.
Now, if I went back to Whittier, I would not want to be a member of the First Friends Church of Whittier. And there are too many people there now, of course, that I knew. But it was a very fine place to fellowship, and the religious feeling, the whole atmosphere.
Supportive climate.
Very supportive.
For religious search.
And you begin to sort of grow into it.
Very interesting.
His mother came from Ohio, grew up in the non-pastoral, and then they changed.
Right.
Well,
so they'd made adaptions, and you just had to do the same thing.
As people went on west, of course, my mother's people, they had come up from the Carolinas because...
slavery.
They didn't
want to
be in the slave. I had never realized till reading one of my cousins, or some diaries that the cousin had, that the people that were farm people and their children had to work harder on the farm because they didn't have slaves.
Right.
And I had never thought about that. And my great-grandfather said that they wanted to change from that. So they moved up to Virginia and then came on up to Ohio. And of course, the mother went to a quiet meeting. Of course, I think that probably, I think Howard Benton has said this, that as these people went west, many of them, they were working awfully hard, farmers, they didn't have music to, concerts to go to, they didn't have too much enrichment, and so they needed some of these other things. I know Father was always interested in the music part of the services, because...
So what other churches had to offer in that line
so this
was
is why
more
they
appealing.
Finally, that's why they finally began to have
same
follow
method.
That pattern some. And that, I can understand that in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And the ministry wasn't very good. I mean, the
people didn't have time to read and study.
They hadn't had time to read and didn't have too much to give.
Right.
I think that was probably true. As I think back over it, I can... Of course, one summer when we were in Whittier, they were having a banquet for all people who were alumnus of Quaker... schools all over the country, and it was fascinating.
Yeah, get together and compare notes.
And there were, of course, they usually started academies.
Yes, and then became
New Garden. They were in Illinois. Oh,
Indiana, North Carolina.
Every place.
Even Swarthmore had Swarthmore Prep, you know.
Oh, yes, that's the way they started.
At the same time, they had two groups.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the way.
But then they cut it off, just like you described.
Well, that's the way Whittier. And, of course, I knew Whittier College because my older relatives had gone to Whittier College. And some of them graduated from the academy. And then Forrest went through the academy at Penn, and then the college.
Went to the college.
The academy, the year I was there, the academy was still there. They cut it off year by year.
Right.
And
decided to concentrate on the higher education.
Then they began to do that, and that's what they did.
And, of course, public education was beginning to come
into the various states,
and there was less need for the...
That's right.
It's been secondary.
But the Quakers, the Friends, were always interested in education and in the right kind of education. And I think it was an interesting movement, and one can see the reasons for it. I'm so glad that I know I wanted to go to USC, and some of my friends, I went to public high school, and my father said, well, go to Whittier 1 year, and we'll see. Well,
and
I wasn't there very long
until
I had seen. I had seen
a very skillful, smart father.
That was right, and it shapes your life. Well, the friends.
Now, your father was not a pastor, though.
No, he's an engineer in the family. He was one of eight, and I have to count up to remember how many. There were four boys, I guess, and four girls. My mother was one of a large family, and I'm an only.
And you have an only.
And I have an only.
That's the way things go.
That's the way things go. I wanted five. Forrest was one of seven. And we lost one. We should have had two. At least it didn't work that way. But it's interesting. My father's brothers were engineers. I don't know why they...
Did they stick with friends?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
I'll say, not my cousins, not too many of my cousins have.
The next generation has gone off to other
different
pursuits.
There were, I was sort of in the middle. Mother and father were both part of large families, and each one of them were about the middle. So father had nieces that were almost as old as he was. And so some of my cousins, many of my cousins aren't living now because they were
the older generation. Right.
One of my cousins was 104, but she said it was too old, and it was. It was.
She had enough wit left to say it.
She had been very active in her day and had traveled a good deal. So, no, many of my cousins are not, quite a few of my cousins are not quite here anymore. That's the way it goes.
Indeed.
That's the way it goes.
Indeed.
But it's been an interesting life with its vicissitudes and so on. I wish I could. There was another, Mary Gove was a very interesting friend in the Boston meeting, and I had a friend that lived with her. She was a school teacher, I guess. And she was, well, there were so many people. Of course, they were much older. We were young, and they just made us feel so
welcome, so much a part of it. Mary Goat is an interesting name.
I guess, I can't think of the name of the lady who lived with her. But she was so...
Were they school teachers?
She was a school teacher. I think the other one was. Oh, and there was a... Oh, dear, I forgot her name. She died quite early. She used to come down here to visit. I can't think of her name now. But the summer we were up there, living in this big parsonage with gas lights, and not being smokers, we had to remember to have matches to light. This great big two-story house. But she, Mary Gove, took us on so many sightseeing trips that summer and all to see the country. Just, you know, little things. You know.
At that time of life, was it in an automobile she took you on these trips?
Yes.
Or did you get on trains and go?
No, we had automobiles.
Uh-huh.
And of course, to me, the country was just storybook country. All these authors and people were